Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger, joining you live from the Bustos Media Studio on this cloudy Wednesday morning, August 7th. Thank you for making us part of your day. So lots going on in the Tucson restaurant scene as parents flock back to Tucson from summer vacations. The first day of grade school for many a student was just a couple days ago on Monday, and that just couldn't come soon enough for restaurants all over the valley who have just been absolutely waiting for residents and snowbirds to begin their return. And in just a couple weeks, the University of Arizona is also going to grace us with its presence and fill up restaurants across Tucson with moms and dads taking their kids out to Target and Sam's Club and Costco and buying them things. And most importantly in my business, taking people out to lunch and dinner and brunch and spending money in your local establishments. But in the meantime, we've had a long, hot summer. Nationwide, there have been talks of sales declines of 7 to 8%. And I've heard from some of the local liquor reps that sales drops have been as high as 30% year over year for a number of restaurants. We've been having a bit of a slower summer than in previous years. Many reasons for that, right? It has to do with travel being possible again. You can go internationally and fly without vaccine mandates and masks. You know, there's just a lot of deferred travel that I think people took and spent a lot of time away from Tucson in the summer. And that hurts a lot of local businesses. In fact, we've had, since our last show, a couple announced closures over here. Alejandro's Serious Mexican Food in Marana has announced that they're going out of business. A really unfortunate circumstance for a restaurant that's only been open for about 3 years, but in a town that paints themselves as being very business friendly. We've talked about it on the show before that the Marana Chamber of Commerce has a restaurant recruitment task force. And even with that, we weren't able to hold on to this locally owned restaurant. There's another restaurant in trouble as well, too, right now. Old Times Cafe, 1485 West Prince Road. Kind of a tough location these days. But they've got a GoFundMe site up right now asking for $20,000 in contributions to keep their doors open as well, too, as I imagine they've had a difficult, difficult summer. Now, I'm not knocking anybody for asking for help, but I don't believe that a GoFundMe is going to be the proper way to help save a restaurant, local or not. If you're not operating profitably, a $20,000 cash infusion is just going to be a temporary fix that eventually is going to get you in trouble if your numbers aren't fitting inside the box. And a lot of casual dining right now is in trouble. Nationwide, there have been failures and bankruptcies, including recently Red Lobster, Buca di Beppo closing 30 of their 74 stores nationwide, Rubio's Coastal Grill closing down over 50 restaurants in California, bringing their total down to only 86 restaurants in California, Arizona, Nevada, and just a couple days ago, World of Beer, a restaurant you may remember from a short and unsuccessful stint in downtown Tucson, also announced their bankruptcy as well. Why does this happen? Well, nationwide, restaurants average a 3 to 5% profit margin. And when you look at full-service restaurants, a recent Deloitte & Touche study came out and said that the profit margin might be as low as 1.8%. When you think about how tight those margins are, even a tiny little uptick in costs can take a business from being profitable to completely running in the red. Now, when you think about finances, you wonder how is it that something like a restaurant or bar isn't profitable? You know, when you're paying $7 for a local pint of beer somewhere, that probably costs the establishment $1.50 or $1.75. And that's true. It's safe to say that restaurants need to run a cost of goods sold of about 30%. They also need to run a labor cost in that same range as well, too. And cost of goods sold and labor cost together are what we call in the industry prime cost. And keeping that number between 60 and 65% of your gross sales is probably the most important number in the entire restaurant business. Seems like it'd be easy enough if you were keeping an eye on the numbers to do that, but it's not so simple. Even if you're able to keep your prime cost at 65%, leaving a 35% contribution margin in restaurants, all the rest of everything else you have to pay for comes out of that 35%. That 65% prime cost is what it cost me to put that meal on the plate, to hand an Oso Buco to you, and the cost of the server to do so. However, like that other 35%'s got to pay rent and utilities. That's a good 10%. You start thinking about maintenance. You start thinking about insurance. You start thinking about, you know, the commercial DirecTV. You think about entertainment, live music and DJs. And oh, maybe you want to do a little advertising on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Well, that's going to cost you money too. Every bit of that chips away at the tiny margins that exist in this industry and make it so tough for so many out there. And so I feel incredibly bad for local restaurants like Alejandro's and like Old Time Cafe that have absolutely been struggling this summer. And I think there's a lot more out there than are probably advertising or mentioning on social media or perhaps even doing a post on Tucson Foodie. And so I recommend to all my listeners out there to go out there and visit your locally owned establishments, particularly now in these lean summer months, and help support those organizations that are out there helping support the community. The kind of businesses that are likely to sponsor your kids' soccer team or give those gift cards to the local charity golf tournament, which you're not necessarily going to see from your Red Lobster or Buca di Beppo or Rubio's Grill in some capacity. And so get out there, support your local establishments. We're excited for the season to come back in, but the finances of restaurants are not an easy feat. We're talking about people investing their entire life savings into business with a 1% or 2% profit margin. Like, that is a really, really difficult feat to achieve. When we think about finances on a countywide level, locally here in Southern Arizona, you might think of treasurer, right? Someone in charge of billions of dollars of our money. And when we come back after the break, we're going to sit down and talk about the treasurer race, how important this really is for Southern Arizona, how you've got to really stay out of the news. We've got a treasurer in Santa Cruz County from an unnamed political party that seems to have made $39 million disappear. And so we might talk about that one as well, too, when we break down county finances, a little bit different than restaurant finances. We're going to have Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley coming up after the break. Thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Money. It is a gas. We are talking all things money today on Jump in Tucson. I've got live in studio Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on Jump In over here today. Before the break, we were talking about restaurant finances and just how tough it is for these small businesses to get by. Let's talk a little bit about county finances as well, too, and how tough it is for a county to get by.
Yeah, it's a major task, and a lot of people don't realize the scope of it. So the county treasurer handles, first of all, everybody knows that they're the ones that they have to pay their taxes to. So, you know, in like 3 weeks or so, you're going to get a nice little letter from me saying, here's all the taxes you owe.
I'm looking forward to that letter.
Everybody is. I just have to say it. I don't set the tax rates. I just deliver the bill and collect the taxes. But there's about 430 plus thousand different tax parcels in the county, and our office is responsible for processing those payments. So over the course of the year, we process about 1 million plus tax payments. That's a pretty big task. And then we take that money that's collected in taxes, and we hold on to it for all of the different jurisdictions that fall under the county. So that includes the county, and it includes 77 other jurisdictions. So fire districts, school districts, community improvement districts, water districts, all of the different districts, taxing districts that fall underneath the county umbrella. So we manage about $2 billion in assets. And then, of course, we act as the bank for all of those districts. So on any given week, we'll process about 100 to 200 million, sometimes up to $300-400 million in transactions.
In one single week, Chris?
In one single week.
Wow, that is incredible. So how did you get the training to do this sort of job? Like, how does one become the county treasurer?
There's only one way to get the training, and that is to actually work in a treasurer's office. And so Beth Ford, who was our previous county treasurer, who retired in April, she realized that she was going to retire. And so 2 years ago, a little over two and a half years ago, she approached me and asked me if I wanted to come join her staff as chief deputy and then run for the position afterwards. And my previous career was not in banking. For 22 years, I was a high school physics and math teacher.
I mean, I feel like math would be a category that a treasurer should really have a strong grasp on. So I feel like that is training for you.
So partway through my career in education, I got involved in politics, and I served as a state representative for Southern Arizona. I covered Southern Pima County and Santa Cruz County in the legislature. And so Beth came to me and she said, you can do the math. You know the politics. I can teach you the accounting. And for 2 years, that's what I did on the job training in order to be able to actually step up and run the office. And it really is a very unique set of circumstances and operations to run a government treasury office. And really the only way to do it is to do it on the job. And so I have done that. I've had the on-the-job training.
So for those that you that remember the name over there, Beth Ford was a Republican treasurer that was elected in the year 2000 and ran six successful terms, right? I believe I voted for Beth Ford now six times here in a row, which is, you know, about as many times as the average voter probably voted for Biden that last time around too on the six times there. But she's run successfully in a Democrat-leaning district and won as a Republican six terms in a row. Unbelievable. What do you think you've got to do to carry on that streak of victories here?
Well, this office is not a political office. Yes, we run as partisan candidates, but I don't set any public policy, right? I don't get to decide what your taxes are. I don't get to decide what they're spent on. In fact, I can tell you exactly how much money the county spent yesterday, but I couldn't tell you what they spent it on, right? Just like the bank knows what I spent at Safeway over the weekend, they don't know whether I'm eating organic vegetables and spring water or Cheeto and beer, right? It's not a public policy position. It's a public servant's position. It's an administrative. We're managing the office. So, but to that end, you want somebody who is fiscally conservative and attention to detail, right? And who understands the job managing the money and who will keep actually the politics outside the office.
Without a doubt, this is certainly a job in terms of politics as a working position, as opposed to some of these other more supervisorial positions where you're meeting every couple of weeks and kind of giving the thumbs up or thumbs down on policy decisions with a vote. Like, this is a day-to-day job that you worked in the office these last 2.5 years. How does the county end up appointing you to this position, politically speaking, over this, both the city council and Pima County Board of Supervisors, to fill vacancies over these last 5 or 6 years, have used the position that's not statutorily required, but they've said, hey, if you're running for the office, we're not going to give you, quote unquote, the gift of incumbency, and we're going to pick somebody that's not going to run for office. And for both Board of Supervisor seats and City Council seats, they did exactly that. But when it came to Treasurer last April, they really only kind of had one choice over here. Like, explain that. Can you talk about that to our listeners?
So there was a little bit of controversy over my appointment, specifically because of that. But at the end of the day, first of all, Beth did not when we had initially talked, she had intended to retire sooner than she did. There were a couple of factors that came into play that prolonged that. So it was relatively short up to the election. It was not the plan, but that's how it worked out. And so when she retired and asked the board to appoint me, yeah, there was some discussion about whether or not to appoint an incumbent. But like I said, this isn't a political position, right? It is an administrative position, and that experience and that knowledge of how you got to realize, I mean, we're not only talking about the county, but you have to understand how the school superintendent's office works, how the assessor's office, and then you've got, you know, 77 other jurisdictions that you have to understand how they operate in order to do it. So at the end of the day, three of the supervisors were able to put the experience over the politics, and I was appointed as the treasurer in April. In that effort, I had the support of the 13 other county treasurers, not the one from Santa Cruz County, who has been let go.
But
the other 13 serving county treasurers, I had their support in my appointment to the position. And they did that for two reasons. One, they recognized that the need for the direct experience in the job was more critical than any political consideration. And second of all, I've worked closely with the other 13 county treasurers over the course of the 2.5 years that I have been in there, in the office. And my former experience as a legislator, right, meant that on the issues where all the treasurers get together, which is usually interacting with the legislature, I was able to help on some significant issues.
So, generally speaking, it would be safe to say that the treasurer is doing his or her job if they're not making the news, right? If they're not popping up in sensationalized headlines. And over the last 24 years, I rarely saw Beth Ford's name in the news in any capacity. I mostly saw it as one of the unfortunate recipients of 400,000 tax bills heading in my direction, but I never saw her name in the news. And recently, in just the last couple of days, our listeners may have read that in Santa Cruz County, their treasurer, Elizabeth Gutfahr, somehow made $39 million disappear. I immediately read through that article and said, what political party does this individual come from? And it wasn't in the news anywhere. Conveniently, it was sort of left out. But let's just say, safe to say, it was the opposite political party of what you're running for.
Well, they're not to get too far into the weeds, but there's some there might be a little bit of political bias in some of the press organizations.
What? This is shock. Breaking news over here with Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley that there might be some bias in the media with respect to government.
I don't have any direct knowledge of the situation in Santa Cruz County, but it looks incredibly debilitating. I mean, even to Pima County, $40 million would be a big chunk of change to go missing. But in Santa Cruz County, and then they're one of the smaller population-wise counties with much, much smaller budgets, both for their school districts and their county administration and their fire districts. So that is a huge chunk, and it is going to be it is going to be a task to straighten that mess out.
No, unbelievable to think that level of financial fraud could exist, and for as long as it did, in such a small county like Santa Cruz, where $40 million is a far more significantly larger portion of their budget than it might be for Pima. But I mean, $40 million is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's still a pretty princely sum, you know, only slightly more than Chuck Huckleberry's salaries over these last couple of years. So
a little bit less than, But yeah, point taken. Well, and that is one of the crucial things that the treasurer has to consider is how to make sure that those checks are in place, right? In our office, IT has not given me the authority. I cannot initiate a check. I approve them and send them out the door, but I don't initiate them. Somebody else in the staff, based upon documentation, right, has to initiate the payment. You have to have that understanding of that, of building those checks and balances into the system so that every one of the dollars, every one of the pennies actually, is accounted for.
Well, certainly thus far, the Pima County Treasurer's Office has done a great job over the last few decades of staying out of the limelight, which is one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on this show today to talk about that a little bit so that our listeners could understand how this position works, why it works, what are those responsibilities of a treasurer, how do we stay out of the gossip column here in Pima County, unlike our little neighbor to the south as well, too.
Yeah, it's a tough position for a politician because I'm selling boring. I'm saying elect me, and except for the tax bill, you shouldn't hear from me, right?
Well, when we come back after the break, we're going to sell you a little more boring, hopefully to keep this a bit more entertaining. We're talking county finances with Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley on Jump in Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we've got live in studio this morning Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley. Welcome back, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, at the break, I was hearing an ad for Ackerley Advertising, and I was thinking about it that, gosh, I've heard the name Ackerley in local politics for pretty much the last decade and some change over there. Do you have a relation to Dr. Ackerley?
I do. He is my uncle. I am one of the few Ackerleys that never actually worked for the agency, but my grandfather started agency when they came in the 60s, and that is my uncle. Julian, who directs the boys chorus, is also my uncle. My father is Keating, and so yeah. If you've been in Tucson for a while, you might have heard the name Ackerley. Somewhere before. And so my first race was in 2012. So with the exception of 2020, there's pretty much been an Ackerley on the ballot pretty consistently for the last decade.
Now, you won a seat in the state legislature back over a decade ago against a sort of social justice warrior on the left-hand side as well, too, in a Democrat-leaning district that, if I remember correctly, had borders all the way down to Santa Cruz County as well, too. Is that correct?
Yes. So the district I represented at the time before redistricting was Legislative District 2. So it basically covered south of 22nd Street all the way to the border. So southern half of Pima County and all of Santa Cruz County. And so it was a deep blue district. Registration edge was about 17% to their side. And I ran based on the fact that I was not about politics, right? It was not about national issues. It was about local governments and education. And primarily what got me into politics was education. As I said, spent 22 years in the classroom teaching physics and math. It was that education. When I got involved in politics, I basically saw that there weren't enough Republicans at the state legislature or in politics that understood the complexities of the education system. And fundamentally, just as with the treasurer's office, right, understanding the systems is so important to being able to fix it. Lots of people can identify the problems, right? But understanding how you would tackle that problem in an effective way, that needs some experiences. So we needed more Republicans with education, direct education experience. And so for a term, I filled that role.
So you won a seat in essentially a Democrat plus 17 district as a Republican out there. Unbelievable. Yes. What other advice?
They didn't let me keep it, by the way. They spent $1 million, right? And a candidate who had national exposure to come in and take it from me. So, you know, there is that. But
you've got to run every 2 years in the state legislature for both House and Senate for those listeners that aren't as politically connected. So you're almost always running. Like, this isn't a 4 or 6 year seat. I mean, this is a sort of perma campaign that you're under. What advice could you give other Republican candidates that are running in a D plus 10, D plus 20, D plus 30 district, because there seem to be a lot of those out there? What advice could you give them to potentially be effective in an election?
Stick to the policies, be authentic, right? Be yourself and the conversation needs to stick to the policies. So, yeah, I am a Republican running in Pima County, right? I'm running for a position that doesn't do public policy, is not partisan in nature, but at the end of the day, it is a partisan election. And so just by the nature of the numbers, you know, I do have to convince quite a few Democrats, people who are registered as Democrats, to vote for me. And my message is going to be pretty straightforward. First of all, we've already said experience, right? I'm the only candidate who has direct experience with the job and who understands all of the complexities of how the system is put together. And to that end, I know there are issues, right? But I have the experience and the knowledge to start addressing it and tackling some of those. The other thing is perspective, right? I am a fiscal conservative. I'm always going to remember it's your money I'm stewarding over. It's not mine to play politics with or try to influence people with. I'm being a steward of that money for you until you tell some other jurisdiction what to do with the money, and then they tell me what to do with it, and we manage the money. And the other thing is I'm not doing this to have an elected title. I've already done that, right? I'm doing this as an extension of my career, right? For 22 years, I taught kids how to solve problems with math. Well, this job is solving problems with math. So even though to the outside the job might look boring, I have an awful lot of fun with it, and I geek out on it. So I absolutely love the job, right? But at the end of the day, it's solving problems with math.
So my understanding is that you're picked up a legacy that Beth put forward, that the county administration, the treasurer's office, is essentially paying for itself. Is that correct?
So Beth did a remarkable job of making the office run more efficiently, right? One of the things is the previous assessor essentially had the system running on almost an abacus, right? So Beth, when she came into office, took on building an IT infrastructure, right, that could manage the office, right? In addition, making the system work more efficiently, payments work more efficiently, the accounting work more efficiently, and so actually brought down the number of employees in the office by about a third to a half over the course of her 24 years. So our current budget completely for the entire treasurer's office is around $3 million, right? However, we make more on interest and the money that we manage than that every month. So in a sense, yes, we're one of the few government organizations that essentially pays for itself.
That's pretty rare in today's government as well, too. Hey, but speaking that this is an elected position, you obviously just ran in a Republican primary, unopposed.
Unopposed. And so up a fight, but you know, I ended up winning at the end of the day.
And so, you were successful in that primary, but the Democrat challengers had their own primary. There was a Brian Johnson running against Sammy Hamed, and it looks to me that the election results have said that Brian Johnson has been victorious as the Democrat challenger and will become your challenger on November 5th in the general election. Can you give me a rundown about the differences between you and your competitor, Brian Johnson?
Well, as I said, I'm the only one that has direct experience for the job. Brian has worked in the assessor's office as an assessor, and then worked essentially as an assessor for the real property division at county finance, right? So when it comes to property tax assessments, he's probably more qualified than I am. And if he was running for treasurer, I'd give him credit for that. I mean, running for assessor, I'd give him credit for that. But he's not running for assessor, right? He's running for treasurer. And what we do in our office is completely different than what they do in that office. The other biggest difference is, as I said, when I look at managing the money, it is pretty methodical and straightforward and about the math. First of all, I'm looking at the safety of any instrument that we're invested in. That's pretty tightly controlled by statute, but the first priority is safety. The second is cash flow, managing the cash flow for the office. So what investments we do in, the maturity dates become important because it's got to fit into that matrix in order to make sure that we've got the money to pay payroll every 2 weeks, right? And then the third thing is the rate of return. Well, how we get the best rate of return and hedge for future volatility. So that's the matrix that we're looking at when we're managing these assets. My opponent won't see it that way. He believes, and in fact, he stated that his top priority is to take all of the discretionary investment with the county and invest it in instruments that support their adopted prosperity initiative, right? I don't see that as the job of the treasurer, right? I'm going to look at managing the cash flow and the rate of return. He wants to influence social policy. I understand, great if you believe with that social policy, but that gets you into really dangerous territory, right? A lot of times we're going to disagree on that social policy, but you know that's neither here nor there, but that gets you in really dangerous heat. If the first thing you're looking at when you're looking at investments is that ESG score and ignoring the fundamentals of operating the office, going to run into trouble.
Without a doubt. Sage advice indeed from current Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley breaking down that race for us. We've got one more segment with Chris coming up after the break. Tomorrow we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance on Jump in Tucson. Dr. Ed Ackerley on Friday. Don't go anywhere. One more segment with Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley coming up after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host Grant Kruger and we are live with Pima County Treasurer Chris Ackerley talking all things the Treasury race coming up on November 5th, 2024. So in Pima County, Chris, like we've had a history of electing only a few consistent Republicans in row offices, right? In general, like we've been able to elect Republican treasurers and often Republican sheriffs, but not a whole lot of these other positions. Why do you think that is?
Well, It's been a change over the last, obviously, 20 years because previous to that, I mean, there was a time where it was, let's say, more plausible, right, that a Republican could get elected countywide. But the Democrats, the demographics have shifted. And so, yeah, we do face a sizable registration disadvantage. But again, the positions, right? The row office positions, they're not really about partisan politics. They're about competency at the job. When you look at those, when you look at a county attorney, when you look at the recorder, when you look at the sheriff's office, the superintendent of schools office, which is basically a financial operation that handles the school finances that we interface with, and then the treasurer's office, it's all about competency of the job. And so I am fairly confident that we'll be able to carry the message to say, I'm the one with the experience, I'm the one with the perspective, I'm the one with the integrity to do the job. And so the letter after my name is not so much important as the qualifications for the job.
But factually speaking, there's one row office that's a Republican and one of the five Pima County supervisor seats that's Republican, essentially making you and Supervisor Steve Christie sort of the last of the Mohicans here carrying the torch in Pima County.
Well, yeah, but it's a mantle I'll wear, right? I mean, like I said, I did serve in the legislature from a district that leaned heavily the other way. But it's about representing and looking after the constituents that are actually in the district. It's not about R's and D's.
And so what have you learned since you've become treasurer that you didn't know before you got that position over here?
I'll tell you what the most surprising thing was to me is the amount of people who still pay in cash. Right? The amount of when we do tax time, the amount of people who actually still pay property taxes in cash.
Interesting. In the restaurant business, we've probably seen it go from about 50-50, you know, credit card and cash payments to about 90-10 being about 90% credit cards and payments. What percentage of people do you think pay in cash?
Well, it is shifting that way too, especially since our online payment systems have gotten better. One of the other surprising things, and this is something that I don't know whether you deal with it in the probably not in the restaurant businesses, but we do e-checks, and it amazed me that e-checks, right, when you pay online with your actual routing number and an account number, they're not checked in real time. That just amazed me in 2024, right, that those transactions actually take a week to process.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It amazed me about how much in banking operation is still run by squirrels in cages in a back room.
Understood. I mean, this is the government, sir. So can I pay my property taxes on a credit card? Can I throw it on an American Express and get some points over here on the county's dime?
You can. However, there is a transaction. As a restaurateur, you will know this. There is a transaction fee for every credit card that you accept. And as a restaurateur, you eat that fee because you want the person to come into your restaurant and buy the food. At the county, we are not going to pass on that transaction fee to people who would otherwise pay in cash or by check. So you're going to pay that transaction fee. So you'll earn the points, but we're also going to charge you 2%.
Which is probably more than most points programs would be worth, making it not exactly a wise financial play. I thought I'd ask, though. You know?
No, but we do. No, and it's a question that we often get because a lot of people don't understand that, how those transaction fees work. And they call us and they're upset that we're trying to charge you, that we're charging 2%. Right, on that transaction to do it by credit card, and we do have to go through and explain it to them. This is, we're not going to pass the cost of that transaction on to the taxpayers if you want the convenience of doing that. And there's other ways to do it. And like I said, the simplest and most effective way to do it, although like I said, we got to wait a week for it to process, is to actually do it by e-check. It's actually less than the cost of a stamp these days.
Right, and no fees at that point for e-check as well, too. It's just the county receives the gross amount that the client is paying as well, too, which probably does make sense from an efficiency standpoint. But I can assure you, as someone that processes a lot of credit card fees, you know, you do a manual typing in of the numbers, a non-qualified swipe, or a heavy Amex card, you could be paying 3.59%, which is no insignificant sum of money when we start talking about the hundreds of millions of dollars that you process in the county. You know, it's certainly something to consider. So you're running in this race November 5th. Where can our listeners find out more information about you, Chris Ackerley?
ChrisAckerley.com is the website. My email address is there, along with the phone number. Let me hear from you. If you want to do it, obviously there's a way to donate on that. I mean, it is unfortunate, that politics runs on money. I wish it wasn't the case, but it is the case. And so in order for us to get message out to obviously people listening to this show and shows like it and who read the newspaper, as such, are stay informed and are engaged in politics. But you got to realize that 80-90% of the population is not engaged. And so we do have to do some advertising to get that message out. So anything anybody can do is greatly appreciated.
No, Chris, we appreciate you coming to spend part of your morning with us, helping break down some of the myths about the treasurer's office here, about how this is working, and about how you're doing in your race coming up on November 5th. And again, ballots come out, you know, on what day?
It's first week in October.
Right, so it's basically an election month as well, too. The grand majority of those will be sent in well before November 5th. So do get out there, pay attention to this one. This is a race that you can participate in. This is a race that should be very competitive.
And to make a plug here, do pay attention and get the word out to your friends that, yes, there's going to be a lot of noise at the national level, but it's your local politicians, right? It's the city council seats. It's the board of supervisors. It's the state legislature. It's the row officers. They're the ones that make an oversized impact on how you get to actually conduct your life.
Without a doubt, Chris, sage words indeed. Something that we've preached very heavily here on Jump in Tucson since its inception is to eat local and to be active locally, participate in local politics, you know, wake up, pay attention to what's going on out over there. It's been a long, hot summer in Tucson. We're getting through it. Things are just about to start to cool off in the desert, but they're going to heat up on the political spectrum. So do pay attention to those races over there. Chris, it's been a really informative morning to get to spend part of our day with you. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming down to the studios to break this all down for about how county finance works. It's a lot different than restaurant finance. I'm glad thus far we haven't seen a GoFundMe popping up for the county to help support your local row officer in any capacity. Hopefully we won't be seeing that one anytime soon. And I will not pay that on my credit card in any capacity either. I'm looking forward to seeing your name on one of those 400,000 tax bills coming out here in just the next few weeks. Don't go anywhere. Dennis Prager coming up after the break. Thanks for spending your part of your morning on Jump in Tucson with Grant Krueger on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk.